Hello and welcome to our London History Podcast, where we share our love of London, its people, places and history. It's designed for you to learn things about London that most Londoners don't even know. I am your host, Hazel Baker, qualified London tour guide and CEO and founder of londonguidedwalks.co.uk. Each episode is supported by show notes, transcripts, photos and further reading, all to be found on our website. Click on londonguidedwalks.co.uk, podcast, and then select the episode that you fancy. And if you enjoy what we do, then you'll love our guided walks and private tours that we offer throughout the year. Joining me in the studio today is Jessica Storyshook, a historian behind the History and Culture blog and a historian about town. She studies the history of monarchy as well as the history of ballet and Christmas. She has previously been a guest on episode 82, Ballet in London, and is here today to talk about the royal Christmas messages. And for many of us, we would have known them as the Queen's Speech, and it was a fundamental part of our Christmas day. Having the presents, then the Christmas lunch, and then at 3 o'clock, gathering round the television, sitting on whatever surface was available, and listening to the Queen give her Christmas speech. But what is the Christmas speech?
So the Queen's Speech, which will now be known as the King's Speech, is formally known as the King or Queen's Christmas Message, though most of us aren't using that formal long title. And what this is it's a 2 to 3 minute broadcast. It was originally on radio and is now on television and all over social media. And it's the monarch is able to sum up the year, reminisce on what has happened in the UK and across the Commonwealth, and look forward to the future and share their good wishes. The speech is usually broadcast at 3 p.m. in the United Kingdom, so that allows everyone to have their Christmas breakfast, open presents, see family, etc. And then they get to sit down and enjoy the speech together, and a lot of people will still gather with their families to do this. In the Commonwealth, though, it actually comes at very different times. So here in Canada, it's broadcast on our national television station, CBC, at 12 p.m. noon local time. So if you catch a CBC, if you're from a different place that's earlier in time, you can watch it before noon. CBC Radio typically plays it right before noon. It is all over social media, though, so we can usually watch it by 5 minutes after what would be 3 p.m. in the UK, because the royal family puts it up on social media everywhere. So we're not really bound by time constraints. However, in the past, interestingly, Australia and New Zealand actually would have to listen on Boxing Day when it was done live because of the international dateline and how time zones work. They would actually get it the next day. So luckily, now that it's pre-recorded, Australia and New Zealand and everyone else gets it roughly at the same time.
So all traditions have got to start at some point. So when was the first royal Christmas message and how did it come about?
So the first royal Christmas message aired in 1932, though it could have come about much earlier. So the head of the BBC approached King George V in 1922 to do a broadcast, and the king said, no, it seems like this radio thing is a bit too newfangled and it seems to be just for entertainment. This isn't what I want the monarchy wrapped up in. However, when the BBC approached him a decade later again, and with some nudging from his wife, Queen Mary, George agreed to do the Christmas broadcast from Sandringham. It was part of a project to launch what was then called the Empire Service and is now the World Service and was the BBC's international radio service.
Given the hesitancy of the king, did he then write his own speech or did he get someone else to do it for him?
Interestingly, the first Christmas message from King George V was actually written by Rudyard Kipling, the author, His speech, this first speech, touched on technology and how incredible it was that the king was able to, quote unquote, like speak directly to his subjects and everyone around the world. And unsurprisingly, in this interwar period, it also discusses peace and encouraging people to kind of don't put your interests above everyone else. So it's quite different from the speeches we see now, but very much in line with what we know about King George V and Rudyard Kipling, quite frankly.
And when was the first televised Christmas speech?
We don't get our first Christmas speech on television until 1957. So for the first few years of her reign, Queen Elizabeth II did give the Queen's speech over the radio. And then in 1957, she shifted to television. So that was very exciting. And if people hadn't bought televisions for the coronation, you can read of people buying television sets in 1957 and 1958 to be able to see that. And again, another way to gather with people to watch it if you don't have a television. And in 1957 and 1958, it was broadcast live. And then in 1959, it shifts to being pre-recorded, which it still is to this day.
And have we had a Christmas speech each year since 1932?
Since the first Christmas speech in 1932, we have had 3 years without a royal Christmas message. So in 1936, King George VI did not give a Christmas speech, which is very understandable as his elder brother, previously Edward VIII, had abdicated only 2 weeks before. So there's a lot happening. Understandably, no Christmas speech on the itinerary. There was not a Christmas broadcast in 1938 either. And for the king's next Christmas speech in 1939, obviously the Second World War had started. So very different in tone. So the jump from 1937 to 1939 is quite stark. And then finally, in 1969, Queen Elizabeth did not give a Christmas broadcast, as the Royal Family documentary had aired on the BBC in the summer, and that was done in conjunction with the then Prince Charles investiture as Prince of Wales. And the Queen felt that the public had seen more than enough of her family during the year and that it would be best for her not to give the speech. The BBC did replay the documentary on Christmas Day, though, and the Queen released a handwritten message instead.
And how did Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II embrace technology?
During Queen Elizabeth II's reign, we saw a massive change in technology from when she first came to the throne in 1952 to her passing in September of 2022. So we see a lot more technological advancements in her Christmas speeches than we saw with her father and her grandfather, who really read their speeches and it was broadcast over the radio and that's it. So when she started her reign, she broadcast over the radio like George V and George VI had done. Then in 1957, her first televised broadcast Christmas speech went on the air. And then in 1959, we see it recorded, which was important because it allowed her to, A, not have to be at Buckhouse or Sandringham or Windsor, wherever it was going to take place. And if she was on tour or somewhere else, the speech could still go ahead as planned. So we see this televised recorded speech happening for quite some time. And then in the late 90s and early 2000s, we see it's not just the BBC that hosts it. It opened up, it alternated between the BBC and the independent television news. And then in the 2010s, we also see Sky News added to the rotation. So it doesn't change how we see it, but the BBC no longer has control over it in the same way. And interestingly, in 2012, to mark her Diamond Jubilee, the Queen's message was first broadcast in 3D. So depending on what you are watching it in, it did not look 3D. But if you have a device that supports it or a television that supports it, you could have watched that in 3D.
So we've had three monarchs delivering these Christmas speeches. And what have their main themes been?
So each of the three monarchs kind of have their own themes for their Christmas speeches. With George V in the interwar period, we see continual pleas and asking for peace and to remember that everyone is part of a larger family. He does start discussing the dominions and the commonwealths, as the Statute of Westminster had been signed and come into effect in 1931. So Canada, New Zealand, Australia, etc., are all their own independent nations now. So they're starting to play on that. Then when we get to George VI, obviously much of his reign is either the war or the post-war period. So his Christmas speeches tend to focus on everyone keeping their head up, being there for friends and family, remembering the war effort, and then after the war, just a reminder that everyone went through all of this together and that we're still trying to push through our rationing and everything as we recover from the war. Both monarchs did include some personal items and the Commonwealth, but it's really this plea for Britain and the Commonwealth to pull together. Then with Elizabeth II, we see a bit of a shift. She's obviously got 7 decades of Christmas speeches, so there's a lot more to choose from with her. Her speeches do tend to really draw on family events, so births, weddings, big anniversaries, those sorts of things. We see those mentioned. She does talk about things going on in the Commonwealth and countries she's visited. For example, in 1967, she spoke about Canada's centenary, and she does balance the personal and the quote-unquote political, even though the monarch is not political. We do see a shift to more religious tones in her later years. It's not quite as prominent in her earlier broadcasts, but in the later decades of the Queen's life, she really did draw on Christian imagery, which is not surprising because we know she was very devout. And as head of the Anglican Church, it's not inappropriate.
And how did she send us a visual message with her speech?
As always, the late Queen was a diplomatic dresser for her Christmas speeches. So she would often wear different brooches or pieces of jewelry to signify different things. So if it was an anniversary of her mother, she might wear a brooch or a bracelet or a necklace particularly connected to her. After Prince Philip's passing, she wore a brooch that he had given her. So she uses these pieces to draw connections. And now there are probably thousands of people who track these sorts of things. And you can find websites that will immediately identify the jewelry that the royal is wearing and what its history and connections are. And the other element that people really focus in on immediately is the pictures and who is in them on her desk. So obviously, the royal family is quite large. You can't have pictures of everyone. So there's always 2 to 4 pictures of different members of the royal family that are somewhat prominently displayed. They're in the background, but you can still see who's in them. And eagle-eyed watchers will always go to spot who's in it. In the last few years of her reign, the Queen really liked to focus on her heirs. So she would have Charles, William, George there in photograph version to kind of draw that dynastic line.
And where did Elizabeth II film most of her Christmas messages?
So Queen Elizabeth II filmed her various Christmas speeches at a few different locations. So in the beginning of her reign, it was recorded either for radio or television at Sandringham House, which is where the royal family spends their Christmas. When it was filmed at Sandringham, it was usually filmed in the Long Library. However, once it started being pre-recorded, she was able to have a lot more flexibility. So we see it filmed a lot at Buckingham Palace, a few times at Windsor, Pretty much any royal residence she chose, although Buckingham Palace and Sandringham are the main choices. And she has a few that were include footage from other places and other tours, but usually it's the one shot of the Queen at Buckingham Palace, either inside or outside, or at Sandringham House. However, with COVID in the last few years, the Queen had essentially bubbled at Windsor Castle, so the last few speeches were filmed at Windsor. And it does seem fitting as it was her favorite residence and she loved being there. So that's why we see Windsor for the last few years.
And who writes the monarch's speeches now?
So the Queen's speech or the King's speech is actually one of the only times now that the monarch can speak for themselves. So Queen Elizabeth, along with the help from Prince Philip, would write her own Christmas speeches and would actually pick the theme herself. So whereas the speech from the throne and pretty much every other time she speaks, there's input from the government and various offices and organizations, the Royal Christmas message is the one time where the monarch is allowed to voice their own opinion and choose their subjects. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see where Charles takes it and what themes he chooses.
And this year will be Charles III's first Christmas message. Do we know anything else? Maybe where he's going to be filming it from?
So we don't actually know where Charles is going to be filming his Christmas message from, and that's going on the basis that he probably will be filming it ahead, as his mother has done for several decades. Now, it has been confirmed that he and Camilla are going to be spending Christmas at Sandringham, but I don't know that it's a guarantee that it will be filmed at Sandringham. I don't think Windsor will happen. He is not known to favor Windsor. And I don't think he spent a ton of time there since his mother's passing. I think there's a good likelihood he might film it at Buckingham Palace before. He's still living at Clarence House, so we might see it filmed there. And that residence is associated with him still, and I think will be for years and years to come. But Buck House is his quote-unquote office, and I think there's a good likelihood he'll probably film it at Buckingham Palace.
I know there's quite a few to choose from, but do you have a favourite speech? Something that resonates with you?
I have two different favourites from the Queen's Christmas speeches. Unfortunately, neither George V nor George VI stand out to me. They are nice, but I don't immediately gravitate towards them. But the Queen has two that stand out for me. So as a Canadian, the 1967 Christmas speech where she spoke of Canada's centenary and her 5-week tour of Canada is always one of my favorites. And then jumping forward very far in time, the 2012 is probably my favorite because it marked her Diamond Jubilee. It was a fantastic year for her, and coming after 2011, which was also a great year for the royal family. They had two weddings. The Duke of Edinburgh recovered from his heart surgery, and in 2012, it felt much more joyous and lighter. And understandably, there's always a lot going on in the world, but the 2012 one really seemed to be a much happier and more joyful Christmas message than sometimes we get.
And do you think the King's speech is still relevant today?
I absolutely think that the royal Christmas message is still very important. As we've said earlier, this is the only time that the monarch can speak for themselves and are not being told what to say by the government or any other organization. So I think that's very important and an important tool for the monarchy. I also think it is important for the monarchy to quote unquote be there for its citizens, and this is another way that the monarch is able to reach millions and millions and millions of people all at once. Obviously, the king and the queen consort go on engagements all of the time, but that's reaching a very small amount of people who happen to be there. This Christmas message is different in that it is broadcast around the world and is made for everyone. And we don't see that very often, especially not across the Commonwealth. And the king not only speaks as the king of the United Kingdom, but also the king of Canada and New Zealand, Australia, etc. And it's important that that isn't lost because those links are still important. And I also think in terms of royal traditions, it's one of the, shall I say, smaller ones. It doesn't draw a lot of money. You're not maintaining a building or a yacht to do this. It's a very manageable way to do it. And I think in 2022, it is more than important to stay visible. So I think it is a very relevant and very important tradition still.
Thank you, Jessica. And maybe if you at home are listening to this and think, oh, I haven't listened to a royal Christmas message for yonks, really got out the habit, or you know what, I've never listened to one. Well, I'm going to embed a couple of those throughout the years, but maybe this year at 3 o'clock, if you're in the UK, you can sit after stuffing your face with your Christmas pudding and you can listen to Charles III's very first King's Speech. And just a little reminder that episode 82, Ballet in London, is also with the lovely Jessica, and you can listen to that one on the website londonguidedwalks.co.uk/podcast and click on episode 2. And if you're wanting to listen to more Christmassy episodes, then episode number 98, Christmas Puddings Through History, with the wonderful Paul Couchman, the Regency cook. Also, episode 75, The Christmas Cracker, a Victorian invention. Episode 74, Christmas in the 1950s and 1960s. What were they drinking at Christmas then? And where did people buy their Christmas trees in London? Episode 35 covers A Tudor Christmas, looking at some of the Christmas traditions that we know now and others that have faded through time. And also, episode 34 I would encourage you to listen to. This is London's oldest shops for food and drink and their lovely ideas for yummy Christmas presents. That's all for now. See you next time.